I'd like you to start by sitting back for a minute, getting comfortable, and thinking of an example of getting angry. When you got angry and you weren't particularly happy about how you handled it. And think of an example that's not your most intimate, innermost, personal, wrenching experience, okay? Think of something that you'd be comfortable sharing with people here. Something that meant something to you, but wasn't your deepest conflict with your mother, okay? Think about that for a minute. Think about the situation, what happened, how you acted in particular. Your fingers down so I'm not remembering. People are pretty much ready. Okay. Let me, for people who weren't here yesterday, very briefly review three different styles of anger. And this time I'm going to have you give me your examples. Yesterday I gave you all my examples of how I handled anger poorly. Today I want you to do something. The first style that I talked about yesterday was a passive style. And what I want us all to do in this discussion is try to identify some of the characteristics of each of these styles. So a passive style is when you have certain rights but you don't stand up for them. When somebody is encroaching on your territory and you say nothing, or you say something very indirectly, or maybe not even verbally. I think the example I gave yesterday was glaring at somebody who was doing something I didn't like and going like that. Somebody give me an example that might fit this style. Something that happened to you.
I tend to close myself in. Like this and punch.
Do you remember a situation that you'd be willing to share with us? That you were thinking about not handling anger the way you'd like to when you reacted that way?
That's one, not the example that I had in my mind. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, this is the first time this happened and I'd handled it the passive way. I was in the school library and we had some books to read for the children. And I picked out about three of them and the librarian was there and she took a look at them and she said, "Oh, I need to use those too." I pointed to two of them. Sort of flinched inwardly, but I didn't say anything. But it made me angry that they were on the shelf for people to pick up, but yet she wanted to use them, and then she saw I was taking them, she wanted them. So I didn't say anything the first time it happened, and I was kind of fuming. I sort of confirmed my opinion that I didn't really enjoy this person too much.
And I can tell by the way you say it happened the second time, and you handled it differently. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. How did you feel? What were your emotions when you didn't say anything?
I was sort of agitated. And I was in a hurry, of course, like always, and I couldn't really stop and worry about it too much, but I was upset and I was peeved, you know. And I think I probably mentioned it to someone else, saying, well, this bugs me, you know, that this happens.
Okay, so you were agitated, maybe you were anxious, you were in turmoil inside, but you didn't say anything.
And I had conflict about, you know, you're supposed to be nice.
Okay, so the message that was going through your mind was, I'm supposed to be nice. I really want
to
punch this lady in the face, but I'm supposed to be nice.
You sort of know that if you aren't nice, then you feel guilty afterwards. So you're caught. I feel like I'm caught either way. If I get assertive, then I'm caught with this guilt for saying how I feel, so.
Okay, let me take a sidetrack here because you're bringing up something really important. There's a notion that is popular in circles I hang around in. I'm writing self-talk on the board, called self-talk, which is that we have a conversation constantly with ourselves. Usually we don't verbalize it, but we're always giving messages to ourselves. A lot of times the messages that we give are fairly negative, at least when we're stopping ourselves from getting angry. The message you gave to yourself was, I'm supposed to be nice. Maybe the message you gave to yourself was also, if I tell this lady what I really think, I'm going to feel guilty about it. So we can give ourselves lots of messages that either encourage, that make us feel good, that encourage us to express feelings, or that really inhibit expressing feelings. There's two particular kinds of self-talk that are important when you're thinking about expressing anger. The first one is negative self-labeling. People who use passive styles a lot do a lot of negative self-labeling. That is, they put labels on themselves that stop them from expressing anger, like, I'm really not worthy, I'm being selfish. That's my particular favorite one that I use. I'm being selfish if I express my, if I want those books and she wants those books, of course I should give them to her because otherwise I'm being selfish. That self-label of selfish always stops me. Okay? What are some other self-labels we might use to stop yourself?
Maybe.
Excuse me?
Being unreasonable.
That's a good one.
Or impatient.
Or what's another one?
Uncooperative.
Okay.
Flexible.
Okay. A few more. Irrational. That's a good one for women, right? Women grow up with particular labels that really set them off.
Bitchy.
I don't want to be bitchy. That's another good one.
It's always associated with women, it seems.
Right. Right.
Aggressive.
Right. An aggressive woman. What's our image of an aggressive woman? I always think of Medusa with all the snakes coming out of her hair. She was really aggressive. Some more? Any more labels?
Pushy.
I don't want to be pushy. Unfair. That's another big one for me. I don't want to be unfair. Well, I don't know who it is who's out there judging what's fair and what's not fair, but I'm real careful not to be unfair, which means that a lot of times I don't speak up. Or I didn't used to, until I taught myself how to be assertive. Okay, negative self-labeling is one thing that stops people from expressing their anger. The other thing, the other form of self-labeling that's important here is setting very rigid requirements. I will speak up for myself if I'm absolutely sure that I'm in the right, I know exactly what I'm talking about, I really, really need those library books, and I know that other woman doesn't need them as much as I do. Okay? So when the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter is aligned with Mars, when everything is right, then I will speak up and tell people what I'm really thinking. Otherwise, it's not worth the effort. It's not worth the trouble. I'm probably not right. I give myself all those self-labels. So when you think about your own style of reacting to anger, think very carefully and be aware of the messages that you give yourself. Probably a lot of those are negative. What you might want to start doing is very consciously giving yourself positive messages, like, that was a really hard thing for me to do and I did it anyway. Or, gee, I did a great job teaching that seminar yesterday. Or, I'm really glad I went on a hike today. It really made me feel good. I'm really glad I walked for a half an hour, even though I might have originally wanted to walk for an hour. Do you see what I'm doing here? These are all messages I'm giving to myself that are going to leave me feeling pretty good about myself and thinking I have some rights.
Stephanie, what do you do with the format that some of us use when we've gotten locked into that about rationalizing or working on a different sort of solution in our fantasy minds that says, you know, well, could have done it this way, let's just pretend I did it this way and then I'll feel good. You know what I...
You're asking me?
Yeah, that's another way of getting through the passive sort of things that have happened to us. To make yourself, instead of being negative, to make yourself feel positive about it, to work it through again in a different way so that it comes out all right in your imagination.
Are you asking if
is that better? Yes, I'm asking what you do with that sort of, where does that fit in this whole resolving, let's say, if there is a resolution through the past
anger? I think two things about that. First of all, I think that's very good if you use that as a rehearsal for the next time something happens. I think it's very good to figure out beforehand positive, constructive ways of dealing with anger. And if that's your way of working through a situation, that's fine. A lot of times, if I can't sleep, it might be because I'm thinking of something that happened during the day that I didn't handle very well. And what I might do is go through that, just like it's a movie script, and rewrite the script. The problem with that is if you stop there and you don't do anything more with it. If you use that as a rehearsal for the next time you're in a similar situation, I think that's terrific. If you only stop there.
I found myself just rehearsing, you see, mm-hmm. in my mind, what I would do if this happened again, how I would handle it.
Great.
Probably won't happen again, because great. Now that I've decided those things, you know. Uh-huh. But at any rate, that, uh-huh. I took this situation, that's what I did with it, and then I realized that's what I do mm-hmm. in these situations, and I wondered just kind of where it fit.
I think that's a terrific thing to do if you go on then, and the next time you're in the situation, you handle it differently. The problem is just stopping there and fantasizing. I used to do that when I was a child. I had an older sister who was a real star, and I thought to myself, if only I was like her, then I could do so-and-so and so-and-so. And in my fantasy life, if only I changed certain things about myself, then I could really be a star like her. And the problem was, I stopped there. I mean, I didn't do anything with that. And it was a way of really punishing myself, if only I was different. That wasn't very useful. If you do use it as rehearsal, then the next time you're in that situation, you can do something differently. The passive style, some of the things that you might recognize in yourself if you use that style a lot, often people who use a passive style of anger feel a lot of fear. They feel a lot of anxiety. They are genuinely afraid to express what they feel. Guilt, somebody mentioned guilt. A lot of people mentioned guilt yesterday. I saw a wonderful button that somebody was wearing. It was a red circle with a line down it, like a symbol for a stop sign, with guilt written underneath. I thought that was terrific. And we should pass those out on the bus when you arrive here. Depression is characteristic. It's not unusual, I should say, of people who use the passive style. You've got all this anger. One way that psychologists look at depression is as anger turned inward. That's not the only way, but that's one of the things that's going on. You've got all this anger. It's not going anywhere. You're holding it in, and you can turn it inward and become depressed. People who are nervous sometimes use a passive style. And sometimes the way they come across to other people is with very little emotion. Somebody who's always even-tempered. When I hear about somebody who's always nice, I get concerned about that person because I don't think that's very human. I don't think that's very real. I don't think it's very genuine to be always nice. I think that person is really holding in a lot of emotion. The other style that I talked to you about yesterday was an aggressive style. Aggressive style you can recognize by a person who uses a lot of use in their talk. You jerk, it's your fault, you think you need those books when I really need them, you don't really need those books, etc., etc. An aggressive style can be very explosive. You can use a lot of threats, a lot of put-downs, a lot of evaluative terms, a lot of terms that invoke a lot of judgment, finger-pointing, etc. So again, I can bring my son in on this. He's not here, and he's only 3 years old. You bad man. We hear this all the time. He points to me. You're a bad lady, Mommy. You're a bad man. Of course, 2 minutes later, you're a good lady. 3-year-olds are very judgmental, and they make all those judgments constantly. An explosive, aggressive style of anger is really trying to hurt somebody else, really trying to explode and let all that anger out. An assertive style, I better be careful how I abbreviate that one, is a style that's trying to find a place where you recognize the rights of other people and you stand up for your own rights. So an assertive style uses a lot of language beginning with I. I feel, I think, I believe. Those are beginning sentences of somebody who uses an assertive style. You have to really be genuine about this because it's possible for somebody to say, I think you are a real jerk. That person is really being aggressive under the guise of being assertive. there's a formula that you might want to think about using as a way of expressing anger. And you might see if it works for you. I'm not going to put this on the blackboard, but let me give it to you. When you do such and such, when you take the books that I need from, when you take those books, I feel angry, or I feel blank, whatever you feel, because then I have no books for my class, and I was hoping to use those books. When you do, and then you describe the person's behavior, preferably in non-judgmental terms. When you say, when you fall asleep in my class, I feel angry because I think I'm boring you, or I feel frustrated, or I feel hurt, or whatever. Okay? Give me an example of how you would say something, an example that you gave us. What's your name?
Barrett.
Okay, in your example, could you see a way of saying something to that woman using that formula? When you do such and such, I feel.
Yeah, it makes me feel small, or it makes me feel irritated or upset or frustrated, and I'm in a hurry and I don't have time to, you know, look for something else that makes me upset or frustrated.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I tried something similar the second time that something similar happened.
And what happened?
It was very upsetting to me to do that.
To do it?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And she was surprised. And she came later and tried to sort of, she didn't exactly apologize, but she tried to explain her reasons or her course of action in some way. So it's a sort of like an apology, but not really.
Did you get the books?
Well, these were another different kind of thing.
Okay.
Something similar happened too with the books that other people needed, and I wasn't the only one. It was kind of like an ownership of the books in the library a little bit.
Okay. I think the fact that you were very anxious in doing that is something that we should talk about a little bit, because it doesn't surprise me. People who are used to using a passive style may find when you begin to use an assertive style, that's a pretty scary thing to do. One thing you might do is start with the people who are least threatening to you and trying that out. Yeah. And then you work your way up to person who's the most threatening to you.
She was particularly threatening type of person.
So she was a tough one to start with, but still you did it, and it sounds like it worked out okay.
Sort of. I mean, I can't say we got to be friends.
That's asking a lot.
Well, you might think about what your objective is in
that?
The relationship.
Pardon?
You might think about what your objective is. Did you want to be friends with her,
no,
or did you want to share the materials in the
library?
It would
be okay to be, you know, when you are on the faculty together, you just as soon be have friendly, kind of warm relationships.
Mm-hmm.
That's more useful and more conducive to working together, but I don't think that really came about.
Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting, Stephanie, that sometimes our expectation for the result of this may be too high and then we feel defeated?
No, I'm suggesting that if you're thinking about changing your style, there are different ways to do it. Some people like to jump in the deep end of the swimming pool, and other people like to walk in the shallow end and then swim to the deep end.
But to expect that if I would use, let's say, the assertive style instead of the passive style, that we would be friends, I think it's a pretty high expectation for to solve the issue would be, I think, first expectation.
Yeah.
And if our expectations are too high, we're sort of defeated about using a new style. Because that doesn't reach this ultimate expectation out there. Mm-hmm. And that's another set of interactions, it seems to me.
My concern in that in the example you gave us would be with an equitable sharing of the library materials. You may get to be friends, you may never get to be friends. That may be, to me, that's a different issue.
Yeah.
I think the thing that's related to it, though, is if you consistently use the passive style, in some ways you're denying people the chance of getting to be friends with you because you're denying people the chance of getting to know who you really are. The danger, the ultimate danger of using the passive style is that you're denying yourself. And at some point you won't even know who yourself is. That's the proper grammatical construction, because you're so used to blocking out those messages that say, this is who I am, and this is what I want, and this is what I think I'm entitled to, and this is what is right for me. If you block those messages all the time, you're going to have a very fuzzy idea of who you are. I think it's hard to be friends with anybody who doesn't have a clear self. So in that sense, it may be related to friendship. Okay, we've talked some about an assertive style. The goal of an assertive style is not, unfortunately, to always get your way, because you may not always get your way. The goal of it is for you to say what your needs are and say what is going on with you in the situation. And that's why I talk about using a lot of I language. What I want you to do now is go back to the example that you started with, that you were thinking about at the beginning of this session. Think about it as a movie script. Jane will use your technique. I want you to rewrite the movie script in your mind using an assertive way of handling that. And then I want some people to give me examples. So think of something you're willing to share. Take a minute to think about that. And then give me a finger up in the air when you're ready.
That's because I shut my eyes and everything is a lot easier to do when I shut. Well, my son is 12, almost 13, and I don't get along with him well all the time. It's funny, I'm really an aggressive person when it comes to anger, but I do find myself trying to be passive just so I won't be aggressive instead of using the assertive alternative. So sometimes I just get so angry that I hold it in, and then I get really aggressive. So I guess I use both styles.
Let me intervene for a minute, because that's something that came up yesterday a lot. People who hold in their anger until they really explode. And one of the things I'm advocating is that you confront somebody, or you express your needs or whatever, at the beginning of that spiral. If you use this style a lot, you probably see a sort of cycle, that's the word I'm looking for, of anger building up and up and up and up, and then all of a sudden, bam, and then you're not angry anymore, and then it builds up again. What I'm suggesting is that you start out down here and do something about that situation. I gave the example yesterday of being angry at the lamp store for not returning my lamp. I went on for 3 months being angry, and by the end of that 3 months, I was ready to get a gun and kill somebody. If I had done something about it after 3 weeks, the situation might have had some positive resolution. So one of the things I'm advocating is dealing with things as close to you can to the time when they come up. So continue with your example.
Right. My reaction a lot of times is just get really, really angry, on how rotten he is or whatever. When I replayed it as a movie and redid the scene, I realized that I am a pretty angry. I substitute anger for other emotions a lot. It's okay to be angry. I grew up, it was okay to be angry. It was not okay to be loving. And so, lots of ways to express anger and not a whole lot to express the other emotions. So what would happen in that case to replay it is it would help me get to the bottom of what am I really feeling. Am I feeling like a failure as a parent, or am I feeling hurt at this behavior? That's real devastating from this, even behave that way towards his brother or whatever. And then he would know me better. And I think sometimes that kids don't know us very well, because we do sort of things.
So give me an example of a sentence you would say to him.
When you behave this way, I feel really hurt inside, or I feel like I'm a real failure as a parent. You know, I just don't know what's going on with you when you act this way, because you know no other ways of acting, and through treating people. And I could see that being an opening for more dialogue instead of just being angry, and, which would make him angry in return, not being productive.
So one of the things an assertive style is intended to do is to give the other person choices. Now, if you say to a 13-year-old kid, you're really acting like a jerk, stop doing that, what's the kid going to do? What would your kid do? Get defensive, get angry in turn, and then the situation escalates. The way you're presenting it, when you behave that way, I am upset because I don't know why you're doing it, gives him a lot of choices.
Yeah, when she was talking about her situation, she said, when you do that, it makes me feel, that's not the right word to do. You can't say makes. I know that's the wrong word, because then it puts it on the other person again. No matter how you say it, if you say makes, even when you do this, it makes me feel angry. That's wrong. You've got to say, I feel angry, and take responsibility for your anger.
That's tricky.
It's tricky, because that one word makes you make the person defensive, because suddenly it's their fault. And it's not really his fault if I'm a failure as a parent, it's my fault, or if I feel hurt. So I can see that a lot of times my problem is I react and I don't stop and think and replay it or think about it the other way.
Mm-hmm. So now, my goal in these two sessions is to get people aware of their style of dealing with anger so that they can then make some choices. Does anybody have an example of a situation like that you thought of? Somebody was aggressive towards you and you weren't happy with how you handled it? Can you think of one now? Can you think of one?
Well, not a specific one. I know that it happens often. Mm-hmm. You know, different people, particularly in a professional situation. And I carry that around for a long time and play in my head what I should have said.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm usually so surprised and I get so emotional when someone is aggressive with me that I become very passive.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I'm the person that's angry,
mm-hmm.
then I can usually think it through and be assertive. But if someone's aggressive with me, I can't.
What happens to you? What are the messages that, what are these thoughts that go through your mind?
I think I get emotional.
What emotion?
Well, I get, you know, very hurt.
Uh-huh.
Very, very hurt.
Uh-huh.
That someone would speak to me that way.
Uh-huh. Does it remind you of anything?
Sure, it was probably a parent speaking to me,
uh-huh.
speaking down to me.
Uh-huh. In some ways, that might be a clue, and you might say to yourself, here it comes again. This is a particular sore point that I have. I know when somebody gets angry at me, I get afraid because it makes me into that 3-year-old with a parent yelling again. But you might also continue the self-talk in a positive way. I'm not 3 years old anymore. I'm pretty powerful myself, and I don't have to be afraid. I think that's a tremendous insight into yourself if you can be aware that way.
The problem is it usually comes so rapidly
mm-hmm.
that you don't, and right, you're not prepared,
mm-hmm.
and it's so rapid that you mm-hmm. can't pull away to get yourself using self-talk to respond.
Mm-hmm. The more you do it, as I like to say, practice makes better. The more you do it, the faster you'll be able to respond. Until you get to respond automatically. It's like any other learned behavior. I think of assertive behavior as something that we can all learn. It's not something some people are born with and other people are born without. Some people are fortunate to have parents who bring you up to be assertive. Lots of people don't have that kind of parenting when they were children, and so they learn. And like riding a bicycle or anything else, the more you do it, the easier it gets until you do it without thinking, and that's how you react. Somebody had a hand up.
I had a confrontation with my son a few weeks ago that went better than it usually does.
Mm-hmm.
And as I think back, the thing that caused it to go better was that for some reason, he was angry at me. And my self-talk was, he has a problem with me, with something that I have said or done, and I don't understand what it is. I'm going to listen and try to understand what this problem is. But it is not my problem. He has the problem, and I was conscious of resisting buying his problem. I just was willing to listen to it, but it was not going to be mine. And after I listened to it, I was able to say, you're right. And that was the end of it. And I felt good, and he felt good, and was done.
I think the notion of being responsible for other people's moods and emotions is a really important notion, especially for women. I think you brought this up also. I think women frequently feel responsible for other people and at the same time give away responsibility for themselves. So if they feel unhappy or disturbed about something, they may wait for somebody else to do something about it. Whereas if somebody else is unhappy or disturbed, they may feel like they have to rush right in and get that kid smiling again or whatever.
I think you also, when someone's aggressive, you automatically initially assume you must have done something really terrible to have someone that angry.
Mm-hmm. Instead of thinking,
wait a minute,
gee, that person really has a problem with anger. He's really upset about something. It's his problem.
Right.
The anger is his problem. That's a hard lesson to learn for women, I think. Did I see another hand? Just getting comfortable? Okay.
I have a question about that. Yeah. I was saying about the anger is his problem or her problem, whoever. Mm-hmm. Where do you draw the line, though? Because if it has to do with a conflict between two people, mm-hmm. at some point it has to become your problem, too. I mean, you have to resolve it together. You can't just say that everything they have, you know, whether it's a complaint about you or... they not imagine it. To me, when you say, well, it's their problem, that means everything they're feeling doesn't have any base. You see what I'm saying? I don't understand how far you take that when you say, well, it's only their problem, I don't have to pay attention to it. That's the feeling I get when I hear that.
Oh, I'm not saying that I don't have to pay any attention to it.
He wanted me to change. He wanted me to adjust something that I had, a rule that I had made. Mm-hmm. And when I heard what it was, what I usually do is become defensive. He wants me to change. I'm not, you know, I'm his father. I don't have to change. But this time, I listened. And I heard what he wanted me to change. And when I thought about it, it was okay. Now, if I had thrown up a wall like I usually do, you're not going to get through to me. I would have just become rigid. But when I heard what he wanted, and his reasons for it, it made sense to me, and I said, okay.
So you said you could change.
I could change, and it would be, what he wanted would be acceptable to me, and I was, and my changing was acceptable to him, and it was over.
I'm just curious.
The defenses against the anger is what screws it all up.
Right.
Was it because of the way he asked you? Do you think it was because of him changing, or you changing? I'm just curious. Did he do something different?
Well, I'm not sure which one of us was able to he was angry, but he treated me with respect. He was not putting me down, but he was not going to back down either. And I picked up on that, and that enabled me to have respect for what he was saying too. You know, it was not an out of control, just throwing rocks at each other kind of anger, but it was head to head conversation. You know, there were some dynamics that were unusual.
Is there something particular behind your question, Laura?
No, I was just trying to understand if he had gone from aggressive to assertive, and that makes a difference.
It sounds
yes,
like he
I
was
so.
Using an assertive style instead of
an
aggressive
style. Yes, and for some reason I was able to pick up. It was a significant turning point in our relationship. Mm-hmm.
That's why I
remember it.
Now you might think about the situation when he was asking you to do something, to change something you may not have wanted to change. Would you have been comfortable saying, no, I don't want to change that? I'm asking this hypothetically, you don't know. I suspect a lot of women are feeling this sort of churning in their stomach at the thought of that. I think that's particularly hard for women to say no to. I think the notion of setting limits and saying, I know you want me to change and I know it's important to you, but this is the way I am, I'm not going to change. That's a very hard thing for women to stand up and say. That's another day's seminar, so I thought I would throw that in.
I worked on a crisis line in Seattle, and sometimes people would call in and be really angry and start yelling at me, why don't you care? Why don't you answer the phone sooner? I've been calling 10 times. Just really get angry with me. And the times that I handled that well was when I could say to myself, this person is not angry at me because they don't even know me. But I am willing to sit here and talk with them about why they're angry. So I would ask a lot of questions. Well, why are you so angry and upset? You know, you called in. You're obviously yelling. Why are you yelling? You know, what's happening in your life? To calm them down. But it's kind of what you were asking. I'm not going to take on their problem as my own, because it's not. But by being a volunteer, I was willing to work with them with that.
But sometimes it is.
I think there's a difference, though, between a stranger talking to you and, say, a husband, and saying, you know, I really feel this when you do that. And that becomes your problem because you have to deal with it in a marriage. I don't think you can say, it's not my problem, even from the beginning, because if it's a relationship.
What I'm saying that is, I'm not responsible for you feeling angry. You are choosing to feel angry. I'm responsible for my behavior. That's what I can change. That's what I can do something about. Your anger and your upset belongs to you.
So just the emotion itself.
Which doesn't mean that I'm not willing to negotiate.
Right.
I mean, maybe okay.
That's the impression I got. It sounded like that's your problem.
I'll give you a very trivial personal example. I'm notorious for not putting a new roll of toilet paper on the toilet paper rack when the old roll is used up. And my husband, this is a, what, if we had gotten divorced, probably this would have been the cause of it, which I think is laughable but true. It's the everyday little things that grate on you over and over and over again that frequently lead to explosions in marriages, as opposed to the one enormous trauma. That's the trivia. It's not trivial in emotional terms. He used to get furious at me, and I thought, no, this is stupid. I mean, I would at least get a roll of toilet paper out and put it somewhere in the vicinity of the toilet so the next person wouldn't be stuck there, but somehow I just never got around to putting it on the rack. His anger at that was his responsibility. However, I was willing to negotiate. I am now quite good at replacing him because I do see the point of doing it. So that's the difference, that's the distinction that I'm making.
I learned a lot from a young couple of whom I'm very fond of about marital anger. They have three questions they go through, which I wish I had had earlier in my life. First one is, seems to me you're angry. You know, are you angry? Sometimes you misread this passive stuff. Sometimes the answer is yes. I mean, you have to be honest about the answer. Second question is, does that have anything to do with me? If the answer to that is no, then the person has to deal with that anger in their own way. I mean, it's your problem. The answer to that question is yes. Then the third question is, when shall we talk about it? Maybe now is not the time. And that's the getting to the resolution. But I have thought those are three very helpful questions.
Yeah.
Because I tend to take on the responsibility for what I perceive as somebody else's anger. May not be anger, and it may not be mine. And so those three questions I have found have been very helpful.
So maybe saying it's your responsibility rather than it's your problem. It's your problem sort of sounds like, and I could care less, and that's not what I mean. Maybe saying it's your responsibility to do something about that may communicate the message better.
Because I think sometimes,
go ahead.
It can be a kind of a cop-out. I know when my husband and I were at seminary, that there was a professor that was always saying, you know, your anger or whatever emotion you're feeling is your own, and nobody else is responsible for you being angry. And it sounds good on paper, and we got home, and in our marriage, it was like, you know, whenever I was angry, well, you know, that's your problem, kind of, you know. And it was like a big cop-out for us, and we had to really negotiate on that and said, you know, that isn't always, I mean, sure, it is my anger and my problem, but sometimes you're contributing to that, and we need to negotiate on what's
what's happening here, because if it doesn't change, I'm going to always be an angry person. And so I guess it's good, but I think it can be used as a cop-out too sometimes for not dealing with your own behavior. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Sure. Do you have a...
Well, I think this brings out the fact that we probably handle anger different ways at different times with different people. Mm-hmm. I'm quite passive, you know, because you grew up, you got to be a nice boy and public figure and so on. Yet at home, we were permitted to express ourselves. Mm-hmm. I discovered how to handle that. You know, a lot of self-talk goes on passive aggressive. I can make a lot of people pay for it. Making me angry and being very nice about it. I'm pretty decent at that, and I'm pretty good at that. Mm-hmm. But at home, then the self-talk doesn't always work. You know, you feel like you have the right to be yourself, and it's kind of a place where you can let go and so on. And I get angry with myself for that, because I'm not handling that well. I don't always handle it well with each other, or didn't handle it well with each other. So we've got a lot of mixed feelings about what we do with anger, too, I think. Mm-hmm. Work it out.
I think the important thing is how you express the anger. Yes. The anger is there. You're not going to make the anger disappear. You're not going to become a person without anger. The only people without anger, I think, are people who are dead. It's a natural part of everyday life. So the question is how you learn to express it and deal with it. And that's the thing that I think is the issue here.
Do you think it always has to be expressed, or can you learn a way of sort of coping with it? Like you talked about the slamming door thing, do you consider that expression even though you don't say anything to the person?
Absolutely. That's an expression.
So
it's a nonverbal expression.
Yeah, it's a positive thing.
Right? I mean, that's the point that I'm making, and I made yesterday, is that if you're angry, it's going to come out somehow.
Right.
Well, maybe it's going to come out in an ulcer. Maybe it's going to come out in your child, and you're getting mad at your child. Maybe it's going to come out in throwing your teddy bear across the room. Or maybe it's going to come out in a more constructive way. What I don't think is that you have to express your anger directly to everybody all the time, every time you're angry. I think you need to make some choices, some conscious choices. Maybe if there are some relationships you just don't want to put the energy into working on, and you think, this person makes me angry all the time, I'm just going to avoid this person. And I think that's fine. If that's a person you can get away with avoiding, if it's your spouse, I think there's going to be some problems. Maybe what you want to do is, let's say it's your boss, and you are just furious, and you want to talk to your boss about the problem, because the thing that's making you angry is interfering with getting your work done, but you don't necessarily want to lay all this emotion out, because you know your boss couldn't care less about how you feel. Maybe what you want to do is write a long letter expressing all of your feelings and put it in a drawer, or tear it up, or send it to your husband or something like that. Maybe you want to, go slam doors at home for a couple of days until you've calmed down, and then go talk to your boss. Maybe the intense expression of emotion isn't appropriate in that situation, so you don't want to do that. But you do want to start negotiating around the things that are preventing you from doing your work effectively. You know, let's say you're, is there an example that you had in mind when you were thinking about
it? Oh, expressing, yeah. Well, there's one thing that it seems that my husband and I always go through, it's when we leave the house. Mm-hmm. Getting organized, like say, especially for a big trip or anytime you have to pack, you know, several things. Mm-hmm. I'm always, you know, waiting for him, we're getting organized, there's always these last, and it seems like invariably there's an argument or a fight.
Sure.
And I finally, you know, that's just kind of the way he is, it's not going to change. And my, you know, I'm the one that gets angry, he doesn't really, except, you know, later than when I bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
But I've finally come to the conclusion that I'll just have to get myself organized and ready, and then say take my daughter for a walk or do something like that, then I'm not sitting there steaming, and then I'm mm-hmm. okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, solves the problem. Mm-hmm. So I was just curious if that was a way of dealing with assertively, passively, aggressively. I mean,
what is it that you're angry at him for?
Not being ready on time. He doesn't seem to be able to change.
Okay, so what might be a way to say that to him?
Well, I think you can say it till you're blue in the face, but I think some people just don't. I mean, it's not like we've never talked about it.
Okay, let me get into that a little bit, because you're bringing up.
Don't you think that just happens sometimes between people, like you and the toilet paper? You did change. Mm-hmm.
Sure, and your husband could be ready on time, too. He's a grown-up. He's perfectly capable of being ready on time.
Yeah.
The issue there is... what's going on there is, I might think of it, I might call it a ritual. If this is something that happens over and over, between two people who are very close, who have a lot of emotional connections going on, I think of it as a ritual or a dance, maybe. There's a dance you and your husband do that has to do with how you deal with anxiety about going on a trip. And you go around frantically getting everything organized, and he's sort of sauntering along, I'm making this up, I don't know you or your husband.
The morning rather than the night before.
Okay. So there's a problem there. Who has the problem? Who has the problem?
I think both of us.
Both of
them. But isn't it just different styles? But
wait a minute. Let's look. Let's answer my question here.
But she's the one that's bothered by it.
She has the problem. Because we haven't heard any sign that her husband has a problem.
Right.
It sounds like he has a very effective way of getting her to do all the packing, I would say.
I don't pack his stuff. He's going to pack it.
Okay, but you do everything else. You pack your daughter's, you pack yours. This is a familiar one to me. Okay?
But isn't there a dynamic at work there of him shifting some responsibility to her to get them there on time? And he's happy to do that because she's so eager, you know, to take this and get them on time. Isn't there some of that going on in the dance? You know, okay, you know, it's okay. You pack up the kid, you pack up your stuff, and just leave me alone to do mine.
There could be. I don't know enough about the situation.
Men do that.
But let's focus.
Do that twice.
Sure. And women are all very responsible go around and lock all the windows
all.
And everything.
What's the worst thing that could happen? The worst thing that could happen is you miss the plane.
No, this is a problem for her.
Sure it is. But I mean, if you're not going to change, I'm getting very anxious. You know, I'm one of those. Mm-hmm. I'm getting very anxious about the fact that we are going to miss the train or plane.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get really stupid about that. And the thing, you either face it this way or you say to yourself, so we miss it, so what does that mean? Mm-hmm.
I liked her solution because she took responsibility for the fact that if he changed, he may change, but then again, he may not, so you'll take care of yourself. So if you're going to be a happier person, if you go on a walk after you've gotten all packed, fine.
See, the very important thing that you recognize is that you cannot change him.
Right.
You can never change him. He's got to change himself if he wants to. If he doesn't want to, he's not going to change no matter how many times you tell him to or ask him to or whatever. So the problem there is your tension and your anger, and you have done something, as she pointed out, to very effectively deal with that. So now you're not angry.
I think I've noticed in a way, just slightly, that when I take the pressure off that way, miraculous things happen.
Right.
You know,
right.
It starts to get rid of them quick.
Right. This is because you've got a dance going on, and you're saying, I'm not dancing anymore. And you're giving your husband a lot of room to change.
Mm-hmm.
You're giving him a lot of room to change. What you might expect to happen if you're involved in a relationship like this that has a lot of predictable incidents like this, and you start to change and you start to step out of it and not do what you usually do, what do you think the other person's going to do? How do you think the other person's going to react?
They have to change their dance too.
Are they going to be happy?
They could feel the freedom to do it, maybe never
again. The positive thing is they could feel the freedom. What also might happen is they're going to get very anxious because the predictable pattern that they're used to is not happening. And they're going to work as hard as they can to get you to change. Now, I'll give you another example from what may seem to you like my very neurotic life. My mother loves to feed people, and she will give me a first helping, and then she'll say, take some more, and she'll take a spoon and put things on my plate, and then she'll say, take some more. And I hate having somebody put food on my plate if I don't want it. What I used to do is get more and more sullen and withdrawn and hostile and just sit back and not eat it. And I would get furious at her, and then she would get mad at me because I'd left all this food over, and didn't I like her cooking, and she slaved all day over the hot stove and blah, blah, blah. And the thing that got me, the first thing I did was think about what got me really angry. And it wasn't the food, it was the fact that I said no to her and she didn't hear it. So I actually took my own advice one day and I said, when you continue to give me food after I say no, I get very angry because I think you don't hear me. You're not listening to me. Now, all of you would appreciate that message and think, oh, yes, I understand. I'm not going to give you food anymore. What do you think she did? She said, but I'm only trying to help, which is my mother's way of being aggressive, right? I'm only trying to help. What she was trying to do, I was interrupting this dance that we had going for years and years and years. And when I say dance, I don't mean happy fun. I mean a pattern that we had gotten stuck in that was very difficult for both of us to stop. What she was trying to do was to reestablish the pattern, because my acting like a grown-up and saying to her, I really mean it when I say no, was different from the way I had acted for 20-some, 30-some, maybe close to 35, 36, some years before that, which was turning into a five-year-old child saying, no, you know, which is more or less what I had done before that. And she was anxious and uncomfortable, and it meant she had to change. And she wasn't necessarily ready to change. But she could no longer do what she had been doing when I stopped doing my part of the dance, which is exactly the kind of situation that you have described. We have time for about 2 minutes of last thoughts and questions and comments.
You can talk yourself, or you can use self-talk sometimes, but a lot of these things are feelings, and you don't necessarily change.
Get rid of anger.
Well, that's a debate among psychologist. What's the relationship between ideas and thoughts and feelings? Some people say we have the feelings first and then we have ideas and thoughts and self-talk. Other people say that the feelings we have come from the self-talk, the messages that we give ourselves. And we can choose what those messages are to some extent. We can train ourselves to say, gee, I really handled that situation well. I didn't get mad at my husband, even though we're about to leave, even though the plane's leaving at 2 and it's 1:45 and we're still in the house. Okay? You can give yourself positive messages that will leave you feeling good. So you might think about the feelings you have coming from and being a result of the messages you give yourself, as opposed to the other way around. It's a different way of thinking about emotion. We're used to thinking about emotion as something natural that we have no control over, but in fact we make lots of choices all the time about how we perceive things and interpret things. Okay, thank you all.